Welcome to Inside the Rebels, episode 8. It is the I can't get up for this episode. I'm Joe Arrigo along with Jonathan Von Tobel, yeah. JVT. Did you like that?
I don't get it, so you're going to have to explain it to me.
Okay, I'm more than happy to. Now, Saturday, you and I were sitting standing next to each other in Tony Sanchez's press conference, and he said, no, the guys just couldn't get up for this game. They just weren't into the game. They weren't energized.
Okay.
And that's what this episode's about.
How much? So then, if we're going to start on that, then how much of that do you put on a coaching staff?
Dude.
Because I mean, emotionally, and we'll get into because I know you had it in your notes about just the letdown from Hawaii. But my initial thought was it might be a little bit of a letdown for these kids just because you go to Hawaii, you get a big win in a place where it hasn't been really kind to UNLV,
right?
And then you come back and it's kind of like, all right, maybe a bowl is there, but you put all your emotion to a comeback win and then you come back, they come out flat. Is it on the kids? Or do you put it on Tony Sanchez and his staff because you have to get them ready for a very important game back at home?
You know what? I think it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. Now, I was worried about this Monday.
Sanchez fell on the sword on that, too.
No, he did. Yeah. And here's the thing. Monday at the bill signing for the stadium, he was there, and he was there a long time. And I was the last person that he was with interviewing him. And I had more questions to ask him, but in the back of my mind, I was like, he's got to get ready for a game Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I seriously thought about that, more so than doing my own job. And afterwards, I had mentioned that to him, like, man, like, I know, thank you for the time, bro. Like, seriously, I know you got to get ready. He's like, yeah, it's been a long day. So that I think that may have played a role in it because he's taken away valuable hours of his time that he probably is doing, watching film with his guys or prepping the guys to go sign bills and do all the other, you know, stuff that a head coach has to do, even like when it comes to fundraising and stuff.
Well, he's mentioned that actually a couple times, and when he talked to Steve during the bill signing, that was one of the things was his wife actually went up to him, is a story he shared,
yeah.
His wife was like, hey, are you going to focus on football at any point? Because
yeah.
We have all this stuff going on, and you're running around back and forth. Do you have time for football? And he said that a couple times to where, you know, he's going around fundraising. He's going around getting the word out there to get people behind the program.
Yep.
And he's mentioned he leaves a lot to his staff because he has to go around and be the face and try to get people behind it. And I wonder if that just caught up to them this week.
I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a growing process for this team and a learning process. This is where Troy Hawthorne and Kenny Keyes and Johnny Stanton, who was at a Power 5 program, mm-hmm. and Hall, who was at a Power 5 program. This is where these guys as upperclassmen. Devontae Boyd's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. This is where they have to step up and show this is how you prepare for a game. Now, the thing is this. Devontae's never been in a situation, at least here at UNLV, where the expectation level has been raised and a bowl has been possible. You know, his first year, they had, what, one, two wins?
I believe his freshman year was the 7-win season. I could be wrong because he is a junior. That was 3 years ago.
Okay, so maybe. So there's that year. Then the sophomore year, obviously a fall off. This year.
It's around there, yeah.
Yeah, so then this year you have the 3 wins right now, same amount of wins as last year. He hasn't been in that situation, so he doesn't really know how to get ready after a big win to come back after a tough game, you know?
But just to fix that, he's a junior now,
yeah.
So he actually would have been a freshman the year after the bowl win.
So again,
never
had more than 3 wins in a season in his career at UNLV. So the other guys, though, Johnny at Nebraska, they had success when he was there. He was a very minuscule part of it, but he's had success there. Illinois had success there with Hall when he was there. So there's guys that are there, even with Hawthorne and Keyes. They're still, even with Boyd, to your point, they're all upperclassmen. They all need to step up and make sure these guys are ready. To a man, I talked to one of the coaches after the game. I hung out after when you went back up to the press box. I stayed down and talked to
finish my awesome piece on LV Sports.
It was great, by the way. I did read it.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I always read your stuff.
Oh, cool.
I know you write it. If it's somebody else. Yeah, no, I'm just
kidding. I like writing. I do like writing, so I do like to put in a little effort into those. So I appreciate it.
No worries, bro. Yeah. So, the end of the day, I talked to one of the coaches, and I'm very close with him, and I walked out to him, and I gave him a hug, as always, and I said, man, what happened? He goes, bro, I don't know what just happened. I can't tell you. He was dumbfounded.
Yeah.
And I was like, the first half, like, it just looked like you got pushed around. He goes, yeah, and he goes, the thing is there was no energy. That's not us. And I noticed that on the sideline. Now, you and I sit on opposite ends of the press box. And that's kind of good in a way because we can't sit and talk then and do what we normally do. So we kind of focus on our job. And normally on the sideline, the strength and conditioning coach and even Coach Cox, who's the director of football development for UNLV, they get the guys jumping up around and the sidelines going. There was none of that this week in the first half. Not once. That is not like the Rebels. That's under Tony Sanchez. And it's not like the Rebels this year as long as I've been at the home games. So I was kind of surprised by that. And so part of it falls on Tony and the coaches. And I think part of it's on the players. But this is a learning process for the players. They've never been in this situation. Expectations have never been where we could go to, at least with this group, we can get to a bowl and we're building something special. It hasn't been there yet. So this is learning for them too. So hopefully they can learn from this. And then let's say they get a win this week against San Jose State, then use this as it'll be a big win because now you have more wins than you had the year before. And then you turn around and you go into a Wyoming game where they have five wins.
It's going to be a tough game.
A lot tougher than what I originally thought.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the energy, too, I think it's really tough because Colorado State took the opening kickoff right down the field. And so I think it's kind of tough when you're trying to get pumped up for a game, you're off of a road trip, and then all of a sudden it's boom, 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 12 plays later, after the opening kickoff, they're in the end zone, they're already up 7-0. So I agree with you because you look down on the sideline, there were times where you saw, you know, the strength and conditioning coach or whoever with the towel waving, trying to get people fired up. But at the same time, as you mentioned, guys just kind of standing there, hands on the hips. But yeah, when it comes to energy, I think it is. It's tough when you're coming off of a big road game, and then right away you're boom, you're in a 7-0 hole, and you got to find a way to dig yourself out of it. So I agree. I just thought it. I'm with you. I thought it was weird that they came out so flat. Like I understand being a little off, but when there's the rumblings of hey, you know, all you got to do is win three out of the next five, and three of those wins that we have at least earmarked could be a pretty winnable.
Yeah.
You know, which I would think at the before the game was going to be Colorado State, San Jose State, and UNR. You know, so I would think the thought of getting to four wins, right? Just adding another win to your win total for the third year in a row, getting possible, you know, getting into a better position for bowl contention. I was really surprised at the fact that they were so just lackluster when they came out. But now my memory is hazy. This was the week of the debate, correct?
Yep.
So you mentioned in our last podcast being displaced for most of the week. I mean, I don't know how much that affected them.
That could have been it. And this would have been, since they knew this was happening, this would have been a good week for the bye.
Yeah.
Instead of 2 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
You know, that would have been probably a little more feasible for the team. But at the end of the day, they still got to go out there and perform.
Mm-hmm.
And the only guy I've seen on the sideline the whole game up for it is a Las Vegas native, Lance Worthington.
Mm-hmm.
He was out there. The music's playing. He's trying to get guys going. And I noticed him, one, because the top of his hair is blonde. And two, it got to a point that some other guys started to get into it. Now it really started in the second half. The first drive, you've seen Colorado State manhandle the defense like you hadn't seen all year. This may have been a hiccup game for the defense because they've been playing so well since Central Michigan.
Mm.
This may have been that hiccup game where it was like, okay, it's the blip on the radar. We laid an egg. It's okay. We can come back and do something. We can come back and make amends next week.
No, I was going to let you finish, but could you argue that the blip on the radar is not last Saturday, but the good games that we saw? So essentially what I'm saying is what we saw on Saturday is actually this defense.
No.
And then the last couple games are actually something that were out of the norm.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Look at how they played against UCLA.
Mm.
The defense for the first 3.5 quarters played well against San Diego State.
Yeah.
Okay.
UCLA, they allowed them to score on four consecutive drives. Central Michigan, they got picked apart. I mean, I'm trying to be devil's advocate. Maybe you could look at the other side and say maybe this wasn't the blip. This is what the team was. I mean, because when you looked, like defensive backs just not playing the ball again, just not getting their heads around. The last touchdown for Colorado State, you saw the play action. Darius Mouton's in coverage, and Stevens puts it up. He catches his wide receiver catches it, I want to say, about like the 10. Mouton's head is never turned around, not at one point.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those plays where the wide receiver stops, lets the defensive back go right by him, catches the ball, and then it's poor tackling, and he falls into the end zone.
Well, it was just that game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's sometimes where you just lay an egg, mm-hmm. you know, in all honesty. I mean, there's days where you producing Cofield's show.
Mm. Whoa. Getting personal.
Well, I'm just saying, there's days where you probably are like, damn.
No, there is.
You know, this isn't good. Everybody has those days at the office.
And it's even some days where I'll go home and tell the girlfriend, like, I had a crappy day. She's like, I didn't hear anything. But you know that you didn't have a good
and
day.
And again, people that do this, not to get off topic, we hear radio yes. differently than a listener. Yep. So, and that's something, me watching football, I watch it differently than mm-hmm. a fan. Fans are emotionally involved, and they're, you know, we need to do this, and we need to do that, and he needs to run to set up the pass, or he needs to pass to set up the run. Shut up. You've never played. Yeah. You never laced him up. You don't know the game plan. Be a fan. Sit back and enjoy it. Yes, have an opinion, but the guys that are really out there coaching it, Tony and Cotton and Coach Bear and J.D. Williams and La Russa and Cormier, the rest of the staff, those guys are the ones that go in and spend 80 to 90 hours a week prior to the game watching game film, breaking it down, devising the game plan. They know what they're trying to do. It's up to the guys to execute.
I saw a worst defense in UNLV history tweet during the game, and maybe suggestions that people should be fired.
You know, okay, I'm glad you – good transition. Hot damn, that's a good transition. And I'm going to tell you why. Huh. I got a tweet. I only get a tweet from this one guy when UNLV loses.
I'm sure.
The only time he tweets, Sanchez isn't doing a good job. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Okay,
that's UNLV fan. That's Las Vegas, though, man. Okay. That's the fan base.
Okay, let me break it down for the fan base. Uh-huh. Okay, let me break this down for you. Your program has had maybe 7 winning seasons in its totality since the program was started. Am I correct? Roughly. I'm just guesstimating right there. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe a handful.
We'll get a final number. I don't think it's – if it's past double digits, it's definitely not pushing 15.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe 12. Somehow 12 stands out, but I said 7. It's kind of in the middle. Okay? You won – you haven't had sustained success since Coach Harvey Hyde was the head coach. You've hired retread coaches over and over again, most notably USC – former USC head coach John Robinson – who took the job because, quite frankly, he wanted money, okay? So let's be real. You have a coach, a head coach, that is young, energetic. He is forward-thinking. He is progressive. He is raising money that has never been raised for the program, and he's recruiting the best recruiting classes with subpar facilities and stadiums. This is what you're getting right now. You're getting a guy in place that is well respected in coaching circles across the country, and you have a man in place that is a hell of a recruiter, and once the Fertitta football complex is done, once the stadium is complete, you're looking at a guy that's going to be pulling in very, very highly ranked recruiting classes along the lines of Oregon or Baylor. And what's the number?
So it's 21. A lot of those weren't full game. Let's just put it this way. 5 of those seasons came before 1970, and a couple of them weren't even full seasons. There were 10-game seasons, things of that nature.
So like 5-4-1.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay. So, again.
Not exactly sustained success. Let's just say that.
No, not at all. So that's my point. You got a coach that's doing everything right. I mean, yes, do you expect them to be USC or Oregon or Baylor right now? No, and if you do, you're nuts. You're nuts.
But I mean, we were talking about a couple weeks ago that people getting upset and actually showing this kind of emotion was a good thing, right?
It is.
Because
it's
you are you're expecting things out of this program now, as opposed to just like ho hum. It's the same UNLV UNLV squad. So it's a good thing that you see fan bases like and fans getting fired up and upset. But you have to be able to differentiate and be like, okay, it's one thing to get upset that they came out flat, that they lost. And, you know, I even saw a tweet like, hey, that's on the coaching staff. They can't come out flat. I agree with that. We just talked about that. I agree with that.
Tony fell on
the
floor,
too. Tony agrees with you. Yeah, you know what I mean? But to say that worst defense in UNLV history,
wrong.
We need to get fired.
Wrong.
Tony's gone.
Wrong.
Like, there needs to be a little patience here. You can't just. Oh, hey! And by the way, if you fire Tony, who's coming with $10 million behind him to build you a Fertitta football complex and things of that nature?
And what recruits will come because they love Tony?
Yes.
Like really, Tony is the reason why these kids are coming. So it's like, come on, like stop. Be realistic now, because at the end of the day, you're not being realistic. You're sitting here thinking that you're going to get another coach to come in and be a guy that is. As good as Tony, quite frankly. I mean, you're not going to get Art Briles or Lane Kiffin or, you know, you may get Jeff Tedford, but he's going to be at Fresno State. He's going to be the new Fresno State head coach, by the way. Hasn't been announced yet. It has to be 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I've been told
I didn't think – I figured they would want – obviously you want Lane Kiffin, just like a lot of programs would like a Nick Saban, but I don't think Lane's not leaving Alabama.
Well, no, he is leaving Alabama.
Not for Fresno State.
No. The reason why is they couldn't get assurances that he was last – stay there more than a year.
Hmm.
Tedford has not only ties to the school – he also has ties to the AD.
That's what
and he's pretty much committed to be there for as long as they want him.
You're not going to get Lane Kiffin, even if they do, like you just mentioned.
Yeah,
you're not going to get him to stick around. He's a hot name, and he could have a coaching job in a Power 5 conference like that.
Heard Purdue.
Yeah, see, I mean.
So, but regardless, or UCLA, because Moore's on a hot seat. Anyway, I digress.
Fresno State, new coach. There we go. So, hey, it's a football. It's UNLV, so we got to touch on the Mountain West. There
you go. Exactly. So, I mean, Tony's not going anywhere. And that's the thing is before you fire any coach on this staff, it's got to be at least 3.5 years after year three, because that's when you start seeing the growth and you start seeing your guys come in, the guys you recruit, the guys that you have put your time in that'll fit your system. Mm-hmm. And honestly, Coach Bear is a phenomenal head coach. Kent is, I mean, Nebraska, Colorado. I mean, he's been Power 5 guy. And a coach is as good as the talent, to be honest with you. And he's at a point where the talent is getting better, but it's not quite there.
Mm-hmm.
So to think that they were gonna just come in and win 11 games or 10 games, I thought 8 games was optimistic. You know, you have realistic, optimistic,
I don't know,
and
I might have to go back to the old podcast, pull some audio. I felt like you were pimping 10-win season.
I thought it was very possible. Yeah. I thought it was very, very possible. I mean, only loss thought that they should have had was San Diego State and UCLA. To be honest, looking at the schedule, me coming in from a Power 5, I'm looking at it like, okay, Central Michigan, booty. Idaho, booty. Colorado State, when they play Colorado, look like they're booty.
Yeah,
it's Wyoming, booty.
Yeah, but UNLV is also a booty on some levels,
I bought into Tony.
Yeah, and
I'm a big believer in Tony. I make no bones.
Tony's brought. I grew up out here. Tony has brought in an energy around this program that was never there before. It wasn't even there following the 7-win season when you go to the Heart of Dallas Bowl. I mean, there were expectations,
Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you have to realize the program though. That's a big step for this program and the way they got there too, where you actually had a quarterback playing well. Quarterback's been a black hole for this program for ever since the guy that they honored on Saturday, Randall Cunningham.
Yeah.
Since Randall Cunningham has been here before I was born, the quarterback position has just been like just this nexus of just sucking all talent and just shooting it out into the stars, and nobody knows where they can find a good quarterback for some reason.
Did you get a chance to talk to Randall Saturday?
I did not, actually, because I learned about I didn't know he was having a scrum up at the press box.
They announced it up there.
I don't know if I didn't hear it or what, because I was just watching the game so intently.
Oh, wow.
Because who came up to me and asked? Oh, I think it was Doug, the guy, the press box announcer.
Right, right.
Comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, did you get in with Cunningham?" And I was like, I had no idea.
Dude, he's so cool. He's such a nice guy.
Oh, for sure.
He actually coaches a friend of mine's son at Silverado.
At Silverado?
Yeah, over at Tyson Editone. He's a guy, if UNLV wants to get a sleeper as far as a recruit, this kid, as far as being a polished wide receiver up here, he is the best. When it comes to fundamentals.
Well,
and he's a safety.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a hard-hitting 5'10", 5'11", 5'9", 5'10", safety. Yeah. That's like a 4'4 guy. This kid can play. He's completely under the radar. If UNLV, if J.D. Williams and Addie LaRussa and Tony seen his film, if Randall got him the film, oh, my Lord. This kid's a difference maker on offense or defense.
I would think, obviously, this is a whole other topic for another day. We should have a recruiting show, I guess, after the season. But I would think if you bring that kid in, just hearing about him right now, he would switch over to safety just because their wide receiver core is somewhat deep and they have some good, some decent guys coming in this next year.
J.J. Johnson, and if they can land
the kid from Houston.
Yeah, the kid from Houston. And an interesting one is Randall Grimes. He's a SC commit. He's been at every UNLV home game. He goes to DP.
You mentioned him a couple times, yeah.
And then if they can get Savon Scarver from Centennial out here, he's the fastest dude in the state.
Mm-hmm.
He comes under, he immediately would probably come in and start and blow the top off any defense.
Mm.
He's a 4-3 guy. But talking about quarterbacks, Randall Cunningham, let's talk about Dalton Snead. Tony brought out big news at the end of the press conference, and I'm not going to say who asked the question about going forward with the quarterbacks because
it was you.
Okay, well, thank you. But
if you go watch the press conference, you can hear your voice.
Yeah, and I asked him, I said, you know, with Johnny getting close.
Yeah.
and Dalton playing as he has been playing the last couple weeks. What's the situation with the quarterback going forward? And he goes, it's Dalton's job.
Yep.
And that led me to believe one thing, and you and I talked about it privately, is Stanton's not that close.
Mm.
That number three quarterback is an emergency quarterback, and that means they're going to keep Armani redshirting. And ironically, I talked to Armani after the game Saturday when he's going out to meet his parents, and he can't wait to get in and play. This kid is chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to get him on the show in a couple weeks.
Okay,
try to get him on, come in. But Dalton, the first half, he looked, and he'll be the first to say he didn't play well. He didn't play well all game, he'll be the first to tell you.
Really frustrated in the post game. He seemed like it.
Yeah, but you know what? He still had that energy. And here's the, that's what
yeah, he actually, because that's the first time I've sat there and talked with him and, you know, and seen him up close.
Right.
He does have a charisma. Even when he's down, you know, he fell on the sword, talked about how, you know, offense was out of sync, but that's on me, that's on me, that's on me, that's all you heard.
Yeah.
And, you know, he does. He's got an energy about him where he's like a natural-born leader. People are almost drawn to him when he talks.
Exactly. And that's what I was talking about when I talked to him and I played the clips. Like, when you get around him, he's got that grit and that moxie. He's got that it that you just like, I like this kid. And he tweeted something out last night.
Mm.
And this is the type of kid he is. And we'll get to the play in a minute, okay? He said, and I'm going to paraphrase, if you would have told me 5 years ago I'd be living in a two-bedroom apartment in Las Vegas and being a starting college football quarterback, I would have told you you're crazy.
Mm.
Like, that kid, I mean, he's so humble, but he's got confidence. And I'm not saying he plays this way. So I'm not, but his charisma and the way he is reminds me a lot of Drew Brees. And even kind of his playing style, Drew Brees in college. Drew Brees would get out and run a little bit. Not as much as Dalton. I think Dalton's more athletic. I think Drew's a better passer. But just the way the guys gravitate towards him. And he's an undersized quarterback. He's a guy that I love Dalton Snead. I have no problem saying the kid is a great kid. And then after every game, he got 40 of his family members hanging out there because they're from Arizona. And to see him interact with them, it's just like, okay, you know what? It's just a damn game. And the way he played Saturday, in the first half, he didn't look good at all. You know, one of eight for like 14 yards. Should have been two. They called a pass back on a
– darn, should have been two.
No, it was a big play. And they said a receiver was covered up or wasn't on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I remember this. This was – who was Mekhi Stevenson?
It was Mekhi, yeah. And I'm like, the receiver checked with you, and you threw the flag. The same judge at one point, the Colorado State defensive end ran past the tackle – ran backwards before the snap and didn't call the offside in the third quarter.
Mm.
How do you call that?
See, on that one, though, this actually I kind of snapped in the press box when I saw this.
Right.
And I was actually, as much as we just talked about Dalton, I was pissed at Dalton because and it's not just him. This isn't college games.
Should have snapped.
Yes, this isn't college games across the country, right? It is a podcast, I can say. Across the country. I'll bleep it out. But no, this is how much it irritated me because I saw it in three games prior to that where when you see a defender jump off, and especially in that play in Colorado State, the defender was 3 yards of field.
Yeah.
Snap the damn ball. Like, it's not that hard. And I think that's situational awareness. And I'm not just,
it's
not
just
Dalton.
Dalton. That could have been the center, and that left tackle could have stood up.
Mm-hmm.
The left tackle stands up, then you get the call.
It's not just Dalton. But in that moment, I'm like, snap the ball. It's a free play, and you can take a shot. And it's, like I said, it's not just UNLV. It's not just the game. It's not just the Sam Boyd that I got pissed. Because, like I said, two games prior, I think I'm watching one of the morning games, the same thing happens, and the quarterback just looks at him, and then he's like going back. It's like you're so reliant sometimes on looking to the sideline to make sure you have the play or anything. You have to realize what situation you're in. When he's 3 yards up the field, he's on your side. Like, snap it. You get a free play. It blew my mind. I forgot who I was sitting with where I was like, why do you not snap the ball in that situation?
I know who was on your left.
Yes, it was Tyler. Yeah, it was Bischoff. There you go. Yeah, I was like, who was I sitting next to? No, because I don't know if you know Brett Lawson. He works for Run Rebs. He works with Gramala.
Nah.
He was our old intern here, and he came and sat with me for a good minute. So I think I was talking with him too. But it's mind-boggling on that play that you don't snap the ball in that situation. It's situational awareness. You have to realize that you get a free play out of it.
And that's something that, again, growing pains. And I know they should know. They should know it.
Got worked up. I'm sweating.
I know. JVT riled up.
Yeah.
Oh,
you should have seen me yesterday. I know, again, this podcast will go off topic. You should have seen me Sunday during the Colts game as I wear my Colts hoodie. There was a extra celebration call near the end of the game. There was a pass interference call that was such garbage. And yesterday on the show, I exploded when we were talking about it. It's nice. Ridiculous. Anyway, go on.
So
see, I'm getting mad.
No, it's okay. Yeah. I like it. Getting to know the inner workings of Inside the Rebel podcast.
Exactly.
So, no, but at the end of the day, they have to. The guys watch enough football. I mean, they watch Aaron Rodgers do it every Sunday.
Yeah.
And he's the best in the business. Yes. Maybe the best to ever do it, like, you know, as far as drawing offsides, taking a shot. Maybe not in the last 2 years, but, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, when you look at Snead's second half, you've seen what you've seen in the games where they won and he was good. You know, you've seen the guy getting out and running. You've seen good, I mean, the pass to Mekhi Stevenson was a thing of beauty.
No turnovers, like he had two. And was
he had one in the first half. I don't do the interception.
What was the fumble then out to Lex when he tried to throw it as a backward pass? Was that first half or second
that
half?
That was first half.
Right near the end.
Yeah, but the thing is with that, to me, it didn't look like. To me, from watching the video, watching the replay on my side of the press box, it looked like a forward pass. Like, maybe because Lex had to turn a little bit, but it still was on a forward angle.
Yeah.
So I thought that was
a little behind Lex, though, and everything.
I don't blame officials. Okay, let's just, I'm going to be real. I'm not that guy that blames officials because, quite frankly, players shouldn't put officials in positions to decide games. Decide it with your play, period, point blank. And looking at the game and watching the game, the first half, they were, like he said, they were out of sync. Cotton called a good game. I thought he called a good game, other than one thing.
I was going to say, I think there might be something, but I think you're going
to There's one big thing that I have a big beef with them right now. How the hell does Lex Thomas, Young Lexo on Twitter, Lightning Lex, the Houston Rocket, only have four carries in the whole entire game?
I have a conspiracy theory.
I want to hear it because you got to feed him the ball.
I think he might be hurt. Not entirely hurt. Obviously, he can play. But there might be something because, and this is the weird, like the first play of the game, I didn't think he started because, and you noticed and I didn't. They had Charles Williams in the back and they had Lex line up at wide receiver.
Yeah, he came
and
in motion.
They tried to do that, I think, three or four times with him. And it just seemed like they were limited because, like you said, I don't know how you only give him four carries. And I just, it looked like maybe there was something going on to where they didn't want to get him too much of a workload to aggravate something or to get something because he's their best player. And I don't know how you get him the ball more. So I think there's something there. Maybe it's just something simple. Maybe it's just a tweaked knee or a hand or
here's
something.
Here's the thing. That play, they sent him in motion. Mm-hmm. It's a jet sweep option. Dalton has to give him the ball. Yep. And there is they ran that three or four times, or I think it was more than four times, actually.
Did Lex get a carry out of the backfield? Because I don't think he did, he got a handoff, did he?
No, he got like two.
Okay.
Two of the four. But give it to him on that jet sweep because they weren't following him on that. Dalton made bad reads there, and he'll be the first to say that. Probably watch the film and see that. It was, he had Lex quite a few times, and Lex would have been gone. Mm-hmm. But they got to start getting Lex the ball. The games that they've lost, except for Central Michigan, Lex hasn't had a big workload. Fresno State, they keyed on him. That's a different game.
But you still had another 100-yard rush, too.
200-yard rushers in that game. You got to get Lex the ball. Mm-hmm. You got to make a concerted effort. The same way you're trying to get a concerted effort to get Devontae Boyd the ball. He had two catches in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in the second half, he had more catches, more yardage. You know,
it was six, I believe.
Yeah. You know, he had a better game in the second half. But
three receptions, 62 yards. I was completely wrong. Six was last week against Hawaii.
Okay, there it was. But it was like a 30-yard reception, though. 30, you know.
I'm such an idiot. Well, that's just Dalton had seven completions, so I don't know how Devontae would have had six catches. But that's just on me.
Maybe they should put more funding into the schools.
Yeah.
I'm just messing with you. No, but at the end of the day, man, you got to feed those two the ball and Chuck Williams as well. Those are the three guys you have to feed the ball. Teams are starting to adjust to Chuck now. And I know he's the new toy, and he's the new guy that can make big things happen and do.
Change pace guy.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. But you got to put them in positions to be successful. Now I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying they got to do a better job of it because right now, Lex four carries for like, 13 yards or something like that? That's not acceptable. Not for Lex Thomas. And believe me, it was funny because I was talking after the game. I went outside the locker rooms, and as I'm talking to the coach, his parents come up, and I started having a conversation with his dad. Love the dude. Likeable guy. I think he's a fireman down in Texas. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and he was just like, man, you know, like, we got to figure this out. And he was just frustrated because he's like, man, like, I just want to win. I know he just wants to win. And his mom says, and I'll quote her on this, he said, he's not fun to talk to after a loss, yeah. End quote. So, and it was like, he takes it seriously. This is his heart and soul. And for him to not get those, it has to be frustrating for him. They got to get Lex the ball. They got to make that effort.
That's what makes me think that there's got to be something there. I mean, there's got to be, and like, obviously I have nothing to go on.
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, so it's just a thought. But it just, to me, when you don't get your best player the ball, and especially when your best player's a running back, it's easy to get him the ball. You just hand it to him. It's not like a wide receiver. You have to draw up plays to get him open. Hand the ball off and let your offensive line do some work. And that's what I thought was weird, too, is because if we're sticking on the offensive side of the ball, Colorado State's given up more than 191 yards on the ground per game. They're not great when it comes to their front seven. And yet, they did not really try to go at them a lot. And maybe it was because they got in a hole early. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
But even then, I mean, the way college football works, first downs, the clock stops. I mean, the way the game works, you don't have to abandon your running game in the first half. And I just feel like it was weird because if I'm the coaching staff, I don't care if I'm down 17 to nothing, if I'm down even 21 to nothing. Keep the running game going. Because
what about 35 nothing?
Well, I mean, still, you still have to because they went up to 35 to nothing so quick that there was still time where you could work the running game and make something happen. You can't, and besides that, I mean, as much as we like Dalton, you can't have a pass-oriented offense with him. You have to be able to run the ball. You have to give him something to lean on.
Here's the thing, too, and I'll be a little critical with Dalton right now. I think he's looking to run a little too much.
Yeah.
His eyes are going down. They're not staying downfield. He's not looking to pass when he gets out the pocket. He's tucking and going.
Sanchez mentioned in the post game, said he's looking at the rush a little too much and maybe bounce it out early.
So I think he has to go in and look at and watch himself, and I think he will. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kid seems like he's very amenable in terms of making adjustments. I don't think he's that type of kid that I'm doing it this way and it's the way I'm doing it. Defensively, and well, even with the offense, I think the offensive line got pushed around a little bit.
Which was surprising.
It was very surprising. They came in 17th in the nation in rushing, mm-hmm. and they turn around and they get pushed around by a Colorado State team, which, again, watching them play Colorado, and maybe because Colorado's having a hell of a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, Colorado's a top 25 team, so.
They're probably going to win a Pac-12 South. Mm-hmm. Like, I was a little surprised that they actually played this well, Colorado State, being Colorado State. So I just look at the line, like, you guys got pushed around. Defensively, their offensive line pushed you around.
That was crazy.
Yeah, Tal made a lot of great plays. Tal was all over the place again. But there was a lot of missed tackles on the defense side of the ball, period.
Yeah, so, I mean, Tal got exposed a couple times in coverage, too.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the linebackers did, and Nick Stephens, again, like, this is why the game was so amazing, because Nick Stephens, he gets benched in the first game. He's only back because of injury, and he just lights them up. 21 of 28. I mean, he was just picking them apart.
And it's when I tweeted out before the game, watching the quarterbacks throw, a lot of their balls, I said, fluttered. Mm-hmm. This could be a big day for the DBs. It was a big day, all right. Big day to get beat like a redheaded stepchild.
Yeah.
I mean, they got beat pretty bad. And one thing I like is Troy Hawthorne, when he met with us afterwards. Troy said, you know, I made some bad plays and I've blown assignments. And I know what he's referring to without having to say it. Down at the goal line, when they sent the man in motion, it was 7-0. And it was the fourth down play. And then they had the little tight end squeak out, mm-hmm. and he was wide open. That was all Troy.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's funny on that play, too, is actually, and I think I tweeted this out, Stevens had a touchdown because not only was the tight end, it was almost like a level thing where you can have your guy over the top deep, and then you have another and you have another guy in a lower, and the tight end squeaks free and he fits it in there, but he had a guy wide open in the end zone that he didn't see. He just wanted the first down, but if he actually looked up to a second read, he had another touchdown.
Yeah, and that's you know, Troy owned that. And here's the thing, I think defensively, I know Tal gets all the pub. I think Kenny Keyes is the best player on defense. Yeah. I think he's the guy. Him and Tal are NFL guys. I'm just going to be up front. Mike Hughes Jr. as well. But Tal and Kenny are NFL guys. Kenny is a poor man Cam's Chancellor. That's how I – same size, you know, college wise, same weight in college. I think he's 6'2". I think Chancellor's 6'4". Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, Kenny is a guy that he's great in the box and he's pretty good in coverage. Looking at Troy has the ability. I think Troy's going to be a good Canada guy.
Yeah.
But he's got to get better in coverage. He's been exposed in coverage a little too much. They got two in the box type of guys. They need to get a safety out there that could cover, at least be better in coverage with things going on in front of him, being able to flip his hips. Mm. But Kenny's going to have a big game against San Jose State. For whatever reason, I just have a gut feeling that he's going to come out this week with a new chip, with the chip on his shoulder. I think Tal took this game a little personal as well. I think they're just, generally speaking, this defense, I think they're going to be a little pissed off this week, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, because they definitely need to revert back to the form that we saw against San Diego State. I don't know. It's going to be tough, though. It's going to be tough because San Jose State's going to come in and they're going to run the ball, and they're going to try to run it down their throat a lot. And the way that Colorado State's offensive line was getting that push, I mean, I hope that that's not a recurring theme when it comes to these next couple weeks, because they're going to face some teams in San Jose State, in Boise State,
Wyoming,
who can run the ball. I mean, Hill for Wyoming just won player of the week.
Yeah, he's an NFL type back.
Jeremy McNichols for Boise State. He's awesome. And then San Jose State, for them, it's just a matter of volume as opposed to really talent. They're just going to run the ball because they build on it. That's good, right?
Dude.
Yeah, McNichols.
You said it. Hey, we're in the studio. There's a bunch of women walking by. What's on your mind, buddy?
But I mean, that did worry me because it was just like the push that they were getting. Guys are like 2 or 3 yards off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and it was disheartening. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I sit behind me sits some UNLV dignitaries, and they're just like, oh my god! Like you could hear in their voice that they're like, man, San Jose State in the bye week cannot come fast enough. And I think, but again, the bye week should have been this week.
Dignitaries that were maybe rubbing the face of one Dalton Snead after the game.
No.
That's one of the creepiest things I've ever seen in my life.
I'm leaving that alone. I'm not touching it. I'll let you and the other person in there. You guys ended up with that. But it was, that was kind of weird.
That was weird, man. Like, obviously we can't, we won't name names, but it was like to the point of almost like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like sensual. It was odd.
I didn't really see that. I just seen him get pulled away.
Oh no!
And I seen who pulled him away, and I turned and was looking at my phone.
There was like, rubbing of the face. There was patting on the chest. There was just so much physical contact. Yeah, I was just like, what is going on here? Who knows? Maybe it happens after every loss. I don't know.
You know what? But that just shows the type of guy Dalton is. He's a magnet.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Dalton. Let's transition before we get to San Jose State. It came out officially in the RJ that UNLV Athletic Director Tina Kuncer-Murphy is going to be leaving the university as far as being reassigned, I should say, taking another role in the university at the end of the fiscal year for them, which is in June.
You've got an extension to June 30th. June 30th will be your last day.
So 8 months to find an athletic director.
And knowing UNLV, they'll start in April.
No, I heard December. They're going to start in December.
Why do you not start now?
Well, they're probably putting the list together now, but I think the interviews are starting in December.
Hopefully. I'm just saying, we watched a coaching search, so I don't know how you're going to go with an athletic director search, but
they definitely need to
approach this differently than they approach the coaching search for UNLV basketball. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, look, let's talk about the coaching search for a minute, because I've never talked about this publicly to anybody, okay? My only issue with it, to be very honest with you, it was so damn public.
Yeah.
Like, Cronin wasn't going to leave Cincinnati, even though when he came here and he agreed to the head coaching job.
Got on the plane.
People I know that know him said, that covered them for scout.com, mm-hmm. said he told them, I had every intention of taking UNLV job. And once I got here, I sat down with the AD here, and they made me some promises about facilities that made me want to stay. He's from there. Okay, mm-hmm. I get it. And then you hire Beard, and with Beard, he was the hot name. I mean, Arkansas State, right?
Yep.
And he got him to what, the Sweet
16? No, Arkansas Little Rock.
Arkansas Little Rock. Right. And he got him to what, the Sweet 16 or whatever it was, round of 32, whatever it was. Media darlings. Hot name. He came. I think the biggest problem was the damn Board of Regents at the time with the whole contract.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I don't even actually blame them for the beard situation. It's just that you took so there's a lot that goes into that coaching search, and I know this is an old topic, but it's the fact that if you were going to fire Dave Rice, then you needed to fire him at before the season or after. Because
wouldn't disagree. I wouldn't disagree.
Because
with that.
If you were going to let the power players that be the boosters of the program. If you were going to let them win out after a slow start in Mountain West Conference play, then he should not have been there in the first place. Then you should have fired him after the last year because there was already rumblings that he was going to be fired.
Right.
You should have fired him and started your search a year earlier because guess what? It's just that was the issue. And then on top of that, it's afterwards. I mean, to be honest, I don't know why you go after a guy like Mick Cronin. Not a lot of people really wanted him, and it just seemed like – it was such an embarrassing thing to where you're going to fire your coach midseason. How many coaches after they fired Dave Rice came out and said, you don't do that, essentially. That's not a good look for UNLV. You shoot yourself in the foot from the beginning, and then you move on with the whole debacle that happened afterwards.
Well, you'd have to think that...
You should have had a coach in place before the Final Four, before the Sweets, during the tournament.
But it'd be hard to do that when the coaches that you want are still playing.
But how many of those guys are you going to get?
Well, they had a pipe dream.
And Jamie Dixon, Pitino.
Pitino was the one.
Yeah.
Dixon, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it would have been a bad one, though. But Pitino was the pipe dream.
Of course.
And I think that's why I think behind the scenes, I don't know. I'm speculating now. And I'll leave it at speculation, okay? I think they almost have Pitino. And I think looking back, Pitino may have came if he knows what was going on in Louisville, if he could see the future.
The whispers were that they had the money, $4 million a year, if they would have gotten Pitino. But then again, it goes back to the whole system because if you, like I said this during the search, is that if you can pull together $4 million for Pitino, then you need to get in these people's ears and be like, you need to give us enough to go get somebody a little less than Pitino. If you can get $4 million for Pitino, why can't you get $2 million for, his name escapes me, brother of Arizona coach who's over at Dayton?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, go get, because he's making $2 million. People don't realize he makes $2 million over there at Dayton. Why not go get if you can get four for Pitino, go get 2.5 for an up-and-coming guy. That's what irritated me, too, about the whole thing. It's like you pick and choose when, like, oh, we can raise $4 million for Pitino, but then go get one of the young guns and raise 2.5.
Well, that was my thing prior to the season, after the end of the season, two seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to fire Rice, go get Shaka Smart.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. He wasn't at Texas.
No, he wasn't at Texas at that point.
No, but Texas had their hooks in. They weren't going to let him go.
Yeah, but even prior to that, like, that's the guy I would have targeted from the get. Like, Shaka Smart, Rick Pitino Jr. You know, I know you look at me funny. I'm serious.
Minnesota?
Yeah.
It's kind of garbage.
He's got to build the freaking program. That's not like Tubby Smith left it in great terms. You know, but
thank God. Hey, you know what? And I know this is the Rebel Football Podcast. As long as they didn't hire, like, George Karl emerged for a little bit near the end, thank God they didn't do that. Thank God.
They should have got Dan and Tony's brother from Marshall.
Yeah, that's another option. But I mean, either way.
But yeah, regardless. But
Tina Kojo Murphy.
Yeah, she's June 30th. It's her last day as the AD.
She gone.
Okay, Hawk. So let's talk about. Let's move on to the game this week. San Jose State. San Jose State's having a rough year. Well, that's typical San Jose State.
Yeah.
Two wins, I believe.
Coming off of a whooping at the hands of the Aztecs at Qualcomm, 42-3.
Yeah, that's the type of game where it's a program-changing game, I think. When you get your ass kicked like that, that's not a good look.
I mean, to be fair for San Jose State, they've had – I use the term revolving door. I use that for Colorado State. That's more of a revolving door. But they've had injuries with their starting quarterback. A couple games they had to start a freshman. So it's, you know, you give them a couple maybe like, I could see why they're struggling. But again, they haven't been really good.
So does UNLV get that excuse? With all quarterbacks hurt, receivers?
Oh, no, of course. I mean, it's not an excuse. I'm just saying, you know, you could look at it and be like, there's a couple games on their schedule that, you know, like a 48-41 loss to New Mexico. That's a close game. It's things of that. So it's not like blowout central every
it's
single
New Mexico.
Week.
No New offense to New Mexico fans.
What are you talking about? Have you watched New Mexico this year?
Not one bit.
Their offense is amazing. It could be the best offense in the league.
So that means their defense is crap.
Not necessarily.
Well, they gave up 40-something points.
Yeah. Not necessarily, though. I mean, UNLV's defense. Look at them. Does that mean their defense is crap, Joe?
How many times? I'm interested to see how many times New Mexico. How much? What's their points per game on defense? Let's see what they're averaging on defense points per game, because I'd be willing to bet they don't have too many.
21. These are points that New Mexico's given up this year. 21, 31, 28, 41, 21, 40, 17.
So 17 is the lowest. Now it's probably. Wyoming.
They haven't played Wyoming yet.
Okay, so who? Hawaii.
Hawaii this Saturday.
Okay, so who they give up 17 to?
UL Monroe.
Louisiana Monroe. My boy Trey Thomas's school, where he played and sacked Tim Rattay 3 times in a game.
Give up 49 to Boise State.
So against teams that can score.
Oh,
well,
all right, hold on real quick. We need to call an audible real quick.
Okay.
Let me just say it's early for me. I woke up late today. I just read you all of the that didn't go well. Let me start this over again.
Okay. Remix.
Yeah, hold on. Man, wait, no, hold on. See, now I'm good. No, I was right the whole time. Never mind. I'm good.
Oh, you messed up.
Wait, no, never mind. I am right. Okay, so they gave up. All right, let's start this again. So they gave up 21, 32, 37, 41, 49, 40, and 17.
Okay. So basically,
More 40s in there.
Take out Monroe, yeah. Louisiana Monroe, and they're probably averaging giving up close.
Either way, they have the best
offense
in this league, so okay. You can give up 35 if you're scoring 42. Just saying. And you talk about injuries. Tarion Gibson, their best running back, has been in and out of the lineup all year long.
Well, okay,
concussion
and that's
injuries.
And Bob Davies coaches that team, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what making sure he's not back at Notre Dame ruining that program.
We are all over the place. I think it's good though. Good content today.
It is. It's a lot of. We don't have a script today.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's the thing. When it comes to San Jose State, when Sonny Dykes left, that program started to decline. And their defense was normally really, really good. The last couple years, they had a pretty good defense.
Mm-hmm.
Their defensive coordinator, who also was their recruiting coordinator, left after last season and was hired by Arizona as their defense coordinator and recruiting coordinator. That played a big role because he was bringing NFL-type guys to San Jose State. I don't think San Jose State puts more than 17 points on UNLV this week. I think Coach Bear is going to have them pissed off for greatness. I think you're going to see the senior and upperclassmen leaders really step up and take this to challenge. And I don't think you're going to see the coaches allow them to lose any focus and lose any type of energy for this game. I'm really confident in what UNLV has going forward for them.
The only thing that makes me pause a little bit is that they haven't played well on the road, particularly UNLV. That is,
yeah, they're like 1-3.
Yeah, the one win, of course, at Hawaii. They've just seemed in those games. We talk about coming out flat. I mean, UCLA, they came out flat. They allowed them to score 4 consecutive possessions. Central Michigan, defense played a little bit better in the first half, but the offense, again, came out flat. Johnny didn't play well. And then San Diego State, we all know what happened there. And with the one completion in the third quarter was the first completion for Dalton Snead. So, I mean, just on the road, UNLV hasn't played particularly well. And so that's what gives me pause and think that I think they might come out flat again because the road games have been places where they trip up this year.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and to play devil's advocate, I think because of what happened on Saturday night, they're going to be more focused.
I mean, this is perfectly plausible, yeah.
You know, I think Tony will have them in a position to where Tony and all the coaches, okay, across the board, will have them in a position where the little things are going to mean a lot. The little things are going to do they're going to do the little things that it takes to win, period. So I don't have a problem saying that. I think they're going to come out pissed off, and they're going to come out in play a different type of rebel football. I wouldn't be surprised if they come out playing fast, and they go tempo early on, and that includes feeding Lex the ball, providing your theory of him being injured is false, which I hope it is. No offense. I mean, I'd like to see anybody.
Of course,
get
I hope so too.
You know, yeah. I mean, you're a lub, so yeah. I mean, but I just don't want to see. I don't like seeing anybody get hurt.
No,
you know.
I mean, and if Dalton continues his pattern, then we're going to have an awesome game from him on Saturday.
Hell yeah. He's going to probably throw for like 245, 250, run for like .130.
I will say this, because I know Johnny's on the mend, and I know next year, providing any transfers, you would think you still have Dalton, Johnny, and then Armani.
Yep.
I mean, from what I've seen between Johnny and Dalton, I mean, I think Dalton, if you next, like, let's go to next year and you have Armani at the helm, I'm comfortable with your backup quarterbacks if Armani does go down.
Hell yeah. Yeah. A lot like UCLA last year when they had Rosen come in and they had, and they were winning with Neuheisel as a quarterback. And now Jerry's is the backup. So to, and they're comfortable going to Neuheisel with Rosen being out this year. So I could I definitely agree. I think the quarterback will be a position of strength for UNLV next year, especially if Armani comes in and takes the job. But no one wants to say that would happen, even if it's Dalton's job, and then Armani is number two. I don't think too many people would be upset about that either. You know, and they figure out a way to split time. I don't think Palahniuk is back as a quarterback.
No. Back at all, maybe even.
Yeah, he may transfer out. Yeah. And that's just us speculating. Yeah. That's no, there's no truth to that. Or just we just
kids just like to transfer when there's a lot of people in front of them, well, the and there's that, a log jam in front of them.
Oh, yeah. And the writing's on the wall. And then, you know, Johnny, Lord knows what's going to happen with Johnny. I would like to think that he's returning and he'll be in a position where he can compete. And I feel like he can, he probably feels like he can't compete.
He's got four games left. He's probably come back this year at some point.
Hopefully. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Devontae Boyd, I'm speculating here too. I think Devontae's coming back. I don't think he's done enough this year on tape to have NFL. He's got NFL ability, but I don't think he's done enough on tape this year for NFL guys to be like, yeah, you need to come out. I mean, he had an egregious drop on Saturday. I mean, it would have picked up a first down.
Since the first game, he's been really quiet. I mean, Hawaii, he comes back with six catches and a touchdown. But other than that, I mean, he's been just, it's been mute from him.
Yeah, and that's surprising because I considered him a top 15 receiver in the country, and I mean he's a-
after the first game we had Cofield on our show at 3 o'clock here on ESPN 1100 saying that he can catch like 21 touchdowns. Like, relax.
He said that.
Yeah.
Steve said that.
Yeah.
I'd have never met Steve.
Yeah. I'll have to pull the audio. He was asking the question. I don't think he was like guaranteeing it, but he's like, it's possible, right? I'm like, yeah.
Receivers are different.
Yeah.
Okay, receivers are different. Look at Juju Smith-Schuster at USC, for instance. Started off really slow. Now he's playing like gangbusters. Stiff-arming people and Juju on the beat. But, I mean, regardless, yeah, receivers are – but I mean, looking forward to next year even, you know, you got Woods coming back. Presley, who he's going to redshirt this year. There's no point in him coming back for these types of games. So you have
– would that be a redshirt or would that be a medical exemption?
Not sure. It could be a medical exemption, which would make him
still. It's technically a red shirt, but
he could,
just terminology.
But he could technically red shirt again.
Yeah,
then,
but that's why I ask. Because if you get a medical exemption, there's still a red shirt year in there possible if he wants it.
Or if he applies for it. Yeah. So you figure next year's receiving corps, you'll have Boyd coming back, you'd have Woods coming back, Presley coming back, Keys coming back,
Stevenson
coming back, J.J. Johnson coming in, the kid from Houston coming in.
Yep. Darden, I believe is his last name, Jalen Darden.
Yeah, so that's seven. Not to mention the guys you brought in this year. Yeah, you have a couple other that are
Trish Claire, Flowers, correct?
Yeah, Flowers. If he doesn't go back to DB, the kid from Modern Day, I forget his name. He's a junior though, something junior. He's another one that would be a guy. So they're going to be loaded at receiver. Running back wise, you would have Lex, Chuck, Evan.
I was going to say, who's the kid that they have?
Number 29.
Yeah, redshirting?
Yeah, he's a stud.
Yep, and that's all you hear.
Yeah.
You still have Xavier Campbell rolling around there.
Yeah, I mean, you have a group of talent there coming back, even the tight end position. You lose Price, but you keep Holt and the rest of them. So you have off firepower coming back next year. Now, and you have a good position with the Triggerman. You know, now you're set. So that's always a good thing. Going back to San Jose State, I don't think that it's – I thought UNLV was going to blow out Colorado State. I was completely wrong. I have no problem saying I was wrong. I whiffed on this.
Well, I was wrong. I had them winning by 7.
I had them winning by 21.
Yeah, but it was just shocking to see how much better they were. And I don't know if – I don't know if when they play 10 times, I don't know if that's – what you get 9 out of 10 times, that outcome. But again, it just goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, just coming out flat energy wise and just not being ready.
Yeah, I like UNLV this week. Go 35-17. I think it's gonna
take a long pause.
A two score game.
Sorry, just the road. I've seen them on the road too many times. You get one good win at Hawaii, but other than that, the road performances haven't been great. I'll take San Jose State.
Whoa. I think that blue sweater you're wearing is rubbing off on you.
31-28. Let's go with that.
Wow. You think,
San Jose State pulls it out.
Wow.
I mean, this is a team that beat them last year at Sam Boyd. So it's not like San Jose State is going to be coming in.
Wasn't it a close game, though?
It was. It was another close game. But I just feel like, so you already have confidence coming in because you know you beat this team last year.
Right.
Different players, but obviously there's just a little bit of confidence knowing that you get them back on your home turf. And again, other than Hawaii, we talked about outliers early in the show. Hawaii was an outlier when it comes to road performances for UNLV. They haven't performed well. They didn't do well at the Rose Bowl. They didn't do well at whatever the hell Central Michigan calls their stadium. They didn't do well at San Diego State, and then they performed somewhat well against Hawaii and get that win. So I just have too much evidence. I'll take San Jose State this week, 31-28.
Interesting stat I just thought of. I literally just thought about this when you were talking. Saturday's loss, I think, is the second or third loss by more than a one-score game for under Tony Sanchez here. Figure UCLA, Michigan.
Wait, say this stat again?
I think it's like the second or third time under Tony Sanchez that the team has lost by more than one score. Or maybe four times.
It's probably four. Because just the season alone, they have three.
Well, UCLA and Michigan last year.
UCLA and Michigan, just this year alone, those are two.
Well, UCLA and Michigan last year as well.
Okay, so that's four. Then you have San Diego State.
Five. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So, but it regardless.
Just keep counting. Colorado State.
Six.
Yeah.
Still under what everybody else's was.
Boise State.
Seven.
There was 7 points going into the fourth quarter, and then Boise dropped 28
on
them last
year. That's right. That fourth quarter.
Eight. No.
Damn you. You know what?
Malicious facts. That's what I call them.
That's why I said it was off the top of my head.
Yeah.
You know, this is the first time.
Can't go making up stats, Joe.
That's what I said. I think. Sheesh. Killing me, man. This is something not UNLV related.
Wrapping on this.
So the Giants cut Josh Brown today.
Oh, they cut him, really?
Yeah, they cut him. Hmm. I got it.
Interesting.
Here's the thing. I got to be honest. When it comes to the situation of domestic violence, the NFL is a joke.
Mm-hmm.
They care more about the dollar sign and perception than they do what is actually the facts. Ray Rice beat the hell out of his wife in an elevator. Suspended him pretty much for life. No one's going to sign.
Originally two, and then the video comes out, and they're like, oh, whoa.
Yeah, hold on there.
They told us you punched her in the face, but we didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah, and then you drug her out by her hair, Captain Caveman.
Ridiculous.
And I'm not making light of it.
No, but I mean,
that's
the ridiculousness of how they handled it.
Right.
And then the Giants quote, I know you're going to go into this, but the Giants, the owner, we knew that there was abuse. We just didn't know to what extent.
It says abuse, dumbass.
Yeah, exactly.
And so
it could have been slapping her with an open hand instead of punching her.
She might have kicked him in the balls and it was his reaction.
Oh, my God.
You know, the thing is this. There should be zero tolerance for this, but if the Giants and the Mara family have been known to be pillars of consistency and class and dignity, this just goes to show that that's not the case.
I was reading this quote. We believe we did the right thing at every juncture in our relationship with Josh. Our beliefs, our judgments, and our decisions. We hope Josh will continue to dedicate himself to rehabilitation and to become a better person and father.
Well, you know what? Someone did. Ray Rice.
Yeah.
Ray Rice has become a domestic violence advocate. He's done a lot of good trying to bring awareness to this. He pulled a Michael Vick, where Vick is now a dog fighting advocate. He's saving animals and shelters and things of that nature. And Ray Rice has done the same thing, or has started to at least. And Josh Brown yet still signed a lucrative contract this offseason with the Giants. And
after they knew, by the way, about his Pro Bowl incident.
Yeah, and this thing at the Pro Bowl, he had to be removed from the hotel or something like that.
NFL, his wife locked him out. They were in separate rooms. He was found banging and kicking on her door, screaming in the hallway, to the point where hotel security and NFL security got involved and got his wife a different room.
Wow.
The NFL knew about at least one incident prior.
Well, here's the thing. and it's the bottom line for me. Roger Goodell is a joke. The NFL, when it comes to this, is a joke.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't think the NFL knows about this stuff, they can tell you when you farted at the age of four with a friend of mine. I did a show with him in L.A. He was looking for a nanny, former NFL tight end. Mm-hmm. He was looking for a nanny for him and his wife, and they have combined, they're the Brady bunch. They have like five kids combined, six kids. And he said, you know, we got to find this nanny. She's in showbiz. She has a show on Oprah's network, and he obviously does. He did sports talk, did some stuff with like Fox Sports and stuff. And he said, you know, when they did the search for the nanny, the NFLPA calls, hey, we can do background checks for you. We'll send it to through NFL security. He had such detailed stuff that, I mean, and I know about this from the draft side of it, but if they want to look up anything about anybody, they can pull up anything from at any age. And he based his nanny off, you know, one person he liked had a little checkered past. The other person they liked didn't. He hired a person that didn't. NFL knew about this. They're culpable if anything happens to this woman from him going forward, in my opinion. Because they've done nothing to protect her. All they've done is protect the shield and their image. And it goes to player safety. It goes to domestic violence. It goes to whatever issue was going on at the time. Just because you dress them up and dress the players up and your stadiums up in pink doesn't make you a cancer-aware city.
No, I think they're just approaching it the wrong way.
League, excuse me. I just got interesting text. You know, they only donate 10 or 20% of the profits they make for breast cancer research. It's a farce to me.
Oh, it's always been a farce. My thing is that they handle it. They have this exempt list, right? So you don't, if a player, let's just go in Josh Brown's instance, he gets arrested, okay? If you get arrested for domestic violence, you're on the exempt list. Now, they still get paid, right?
Shouldn't.
But this is the thing for me, right? Because you, as the NFL, you're not law, so you should not be handing down punishments for things that are law-related. So this is what you do. If you're like Josh Brown, if you get arrested for domestic violence, you are on the exempt list. You're not playing. You still get paid. But once this case goes through, if you're innocent, you keep all your money. We'll see you next year. Sorry, but it's your fault for getting yourself in that situation that you missed out on however long it takes. But if you are found guilty, you get a suspension. You get every single paycheck that you got while you were on the exempt list is now a fine. You get to turn that over, and your suspension starts either next year or in the coming games after the case.
I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Because you get stuff like this to where you get a guy who was arrested, who you knew about, you give him one game, and then all this other stuff comes out, and you, again, everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? Put him on the exempt list, wait till everything comes out, let it get solved in court, and then punish them.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that. And this just goes to show the level of deception that the NFL has, because they've known about this and didn't say anything, and it could be used in the stadium situation. If you think that they're really, truly, and earnestly working with the city of Oakland.
They don't give a fuck about Oakland.
They don't.
I'll bleep that out, too.
No, I was keep it in there. Shit, I don't care. See, I can bleep that out. But, no, they're not. They want to save face. I put out a story. First of all, I told you this. I'll say it on there. I got some threats, death threats today and on Twitter because, I'm reporting what's going on in Vegas. On Friday, Thursday, I wrote an article on scout.com, and it was free for the time being. And it was from a source Thursday night that the mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaaf, upon finding out that the state approved the funding for the stadium and the bill, she threw a fit and in a rage said, we got to find a way. We're going to block them out of their last 2 years of their contract to get them out of that. So I woke up Friday morning, which happened to be my daughter's birthday, and I had like 40 tweets at me. And throughout the day, you know, Twitter got hacked. Everything went down, which sucked. And then someone from her office, who I had reached out to previously, the office, finally got back to me and said, oh, well, we're willing to talk now. But this never happened. From what I was told, I was told pretty much that she got a chance to read the article or heard about it. And major spin control was pissed off on Friday that it got out. It's because the Raiders made contingency plans. The Raiders found out the contingency plan is pretty much the Raiders going to Boyd, taking X amount of money, which I would speculate would be what the the lease fee, what they're paying for a lease, which is, I think, $3.2 million next year for the Coliseum in Oakland. Taking that money and redoing the locker rooms, which is already going to happen because they know they got to do that for a preseason game that they're going to be playing there. And then adding 7,000 to 10,000 seats to Sam Boyd just to make it 42,000 to 45,000 since there's no luxury boxes.
Taylor said on the pregame that they've actually whittled it down to 35,500. At Sam Boyd.
So adding
seats would put it, I guess, to 40K, if that's accurate.
Right. So you figure them doing something like that, they're making contingency plans, which is what you do in business if something like this is going to happen.
Mm.
If you think the NFL didn't know about this, is it the Fawcett Group now with Ronnie Lott?
Yeah.
That they're $70 billion in asset rich. In asset rich. That means he has assets that equal that money, not him.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't mean he has the money to spend. He just owns stuff that's worth that money.
Exactly. Yeah. It is identical to McCourt when he bought the Dodgers. He had assets of close to $1 billion.
That worked out well.
Exactly. So, look, say what you want. I know we got off the UNLV, but this still pertains to UNLV because if the Raiders come, Sam Boyd gets upgraded.
So it can be even more empty for UNLV games.
Dude, 18-3-something?
You mean like 9-3-something? That was pathetic on Saturday.
Well, I looked down underneath.
Stop counting the tickets that you give away.
I looked
down. You know that's what they do.
I don't know what they do.
It's ridiculous.
I looked down beneath the press box, and it was pretty full. It was more full than it was at any game this season.
The UNLV side, yeah.
The other side wasn't.
Empty. I was having a conversation with Dutch. Like I was just telling you, we call him Dutch. He's our former intern, now works for Run Revs in Gramala. I'm telling him, I was getting irritated again in the press box because you see people in the nosebleeds and there's nobody sitting in front of them. And you're like, just go sit at the front, you stupid people. There's one, you know, they have the extension up on top.
Yeah, the very high one.
There's somebody sitting up there and there's nobody in the front row of this section. I'm like, what are you doing? Just go sit. Stop being so honorable that you're, nope, gotta stay at my seat. That's what my ticket says. Oh, God. UNLV fans just bug me. Even then, like, even he shows up and I'm not happy. I'm like, go sit closer. It's ridiculous. No, that was pathetic, though. It was. Like, and you texted me during, I was funny because I was going through my text this morning, and I saw your text. It was like, oh, 18K, got out of here quick. Like, no, 9K, got out of here quick.
That was tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, I know. That was ridiculous. Tongue-in-cheek. And then you tweeted it out, too, like, announced crowd of 18,036.
I did it for you.
Yeah,
I did it for you.
Yeah, I was like, this is, like, yeah, announced crowd, I'm sure. 18,000. Let's count them.
Eggs.
I'm willing to stand, next home game, I'm willing, you know those little clickers that you have? Everybody come to the same goddamn entrance. I will count every single one of you. If there's 18,000. Oh, if there's 18,000, God, I don't know what I'll do. But if there's actually 18,000 at the next home game, we'll have to think of something.
Oh my Lord,
it's ridiculous.
You lost it, dude.
Oh, it's the stupidest thing ever.
Look,
and then they're like, "Yeah, 65,000 seats. Can't wait." Like you can't even fill 35.
Here's the thing. This goes back to the Jackson State game of me and JVT when.
Oh my God.
When they said it was 18,575.
I was okay.
And so the inside joke between us was pretty much the attendance every week. So this one, that's why I tweeted out like, hey, 18,365 or whatever it was. And you're just tweeted me back something. And then that's why I tweeted you, oh, 18K cleared out pretty quick.
Ridiculous. to me, like we brought this up with a pregame show. I know we're running long, so I guess we'll
probably. Well, no, we had extra time. Remember we had like
but. Either way, like on the pregame show, my question is again, like what the does it take to get people to go to these games? Your tickets are dirt cheap compared to Division I programs.
Absolutely. Okay? Yeah.
You want, like again, there's so many people, dude, and this is an anti-stadium. Hear me out before if you're listening, you freak out. Oh, we need this stadium. This is going to be great for UNLV. When do you start showing up? Because a 65,000 seat stadium is going to look goddamn empty compared to a 35-5 with barely anybody there on a Saturday that the kickoff was at 2:30. Because what are all the complaints? I don't know. I grew up out here. What are the complaints about UNLV games? Oh, 7:30 on a Saturday. That's so late. 2:30, nobody showed up. It was ridiculous. And you want an NFL state-of-the-art stadium for this team, so what? So we can put scarlet sheets over the empty seats? It's ridiculous.
Look, here's the thing. What's it going to take? Fans want to see a winner.
But again, you're coming off of a win against Hawaii.
Okay, No. I understand that. They want to see a winning product consistently on the field. This team, the stadium, presuming it gets built, okay, 2019-2020. By that time, you're looking at a team that these freshmen will be seniors, juniors and seniors. The incoming class will be juniors for the most part. These are the guys that are going to turn the program around.
Mm-hmm.
This is very reminiscent, the stadium and how, the lack of support that you see at the University of Miami in the 80s. Burger King was giving away 4 packs of tickets when you buy a Whopper.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay?
I was watching it. It was on the U, right?
Yeah. And so, I mean, just imagine, you go buy 4 Whoppers, you get 16 tickets. That's a party,
that's
baby.
That's ridiculous.
Especially in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's Vegas. They want to see a winner. It has to take time. Beating Hawaii, that's a great step.
Uh-huh.
You got to use them as benchmarks and foundation pieces.
But again, what sticks in my craw is the people who want this 65,000-seat stadium. Like, you want this stadium. You want a bigger, state-of-the-art, awesome, badass facility.
You don't think that'll draw people?
Maybe.
I know it would.
But that's going to add on 20 to 30,000 more people. You're going to tell me realistically 20 to 30,000 more people are going to come consistently to UNLV games, not just the season opener to check out the new building.
I think the whole year. I think the first year, maybe two, yes. But there has to be good product on the field for it to continue. Mm-hmm. I use SC as an example. Again, I hate using SC because I always talk about them on this show, but it's what I know. The Coliseum was a dump when the Raiders played there. Okay, but got to be honest with you. When Pete came in and USC kind of took control of redoing the Coliseum, no one was really coming. That's a 90,000, 100,000 seat stadium at the time. Nobody was coming, so you'd get 40,000, and it looked like you have 3,000.
Mm.
It's all spread out. When they started redoing it and revitalizing the areas around it, and then they made it a little more modern. Now people are coming. Now people are showing up. Now you're getting that 90,000. Now you're getting that 60, 70,000 people. And now people are showing up. Mm. But they want to see them win first. UNLV, and this falls on Tony, and he said it to me in our conversation. They got the facilities. They got the stadium. Now it's my job to get the product out there. He owns it.
Mm.
And what I love about him is he's so calm about it. He's not going to panic and get paranoid. He's going to be like, all right, we're going to make this happen. I think, yes, it is. I was disappointed in the crowd, too. Full disclosure.
Yeah.
I was all week long pimping people to get out there, come out. And if you guys want to make a difference, and believe me, crowds make a difference for a team. If they're down and not energized, a crowd can get into it. A crowd can help on third and long to draw a team off size. They can't hear things. A crowd can help in so many ways. The UNLV fans have to step up. And this is where, in a way, Tony has to, and really Tony, has to train the fans to be good football fans.
Because
mm-hmm. right now, they're not. And it's sad to say, and I don't mean any disrespect, I'm just being honest. You gotta step up to the table and show up to these games.
If anybody's offended, shut up. No, people don't show up. If you're, I don't think anybody listening will be offended by what you said, but if you are, shut up. Turn it off. I don't care. I'll tell you right now. It's ridiculous.
Well, on that note, we went
tune
a little,
in next week.
Tune in next week. Yeah. We're going to tell you why UNLV beat San Jose State, if you're a Joe Arrigo fan.
Yeah.
If you're a JVT fan, why they lost.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't think if you actually like me, I don't think you agree with me all the time. I would hope you don't, actually.
Yeah, I agree. I like the fact that there is some give and take. I like the fact that we actually went back. We went off the board today. I like that.
Yeah.
It was a real show.
It was free flowing.
Yeah. So I'm Joe Arrigo. That's JVT. Find him on Twitter.
At me, JVT. So you can yell at me. You can do whatever.
Yeah, you can curse him out and threaten him, too. Yep. I'm at Joe Arrigo or at Inside the Rebels. Don't forget, we take your questions when you send them to us at InsideTheRebels@gmail.com. You can check out this podcast on the LV Sports Network website or on InsideTheRebels.com.
We got tonight, game one, World Series, real quick.
I got Cleveland winning the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah, I think Cleveland is more balanced in the lineup. Their bullpen is better. They can cut
Andrew Miller just cuts through everybody.
Well, yeah, but the thing is this. Cleveland can cut the game to 6 innings. and they have a better bullpen than the Cubs. And the Cubs have a problem with off-speed pitchers. I think Cleveland Miller slider is filthy, probably the best in the business. And I think Cleveland just has – there's something about this team, and I'll predict this as well. Francisco Lindor will be the World Series MVP.
Look at that.
Lindor's a stud.
I think Cleveland wins too, to be honest with you. I think it goes seven. I think Cleveland ultimately pulls it out. Like, the Cubs have such trouble against actual decent pitching. It's so weird. Their bats went quiet if it was Hill, Kershaw, or Jensen for the Dodgers. Their bats went quiet.
Except for Kershaw game six.
Yeah, but I mean,
the defense let them down, though.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say, they didn't really tee off. Like, in the other wins that they had, like, they teed off against, like, Miami and everything like that. They went the games, like, 10-2, 8-5, whatever. I'll take Cleveland just because, like you mentioned, they're pitching. And Francona, he doesn't care if it's the fifth inning, fourth inning. If he needs, like, key outs, if it's a high-leverage situation, Miller go out there so we can get some runs because they're not scoring on you.
Yeah, exactly. And he'll let them go because Miller actually was a hell of a starter for UNC.
I'll take Miller as the MVP, though.
I'll tell you like this. I'm going to catch heat for this. Mm. If I had to choose one young shortstop in all of baseball to build my team around, Correa, Seager, I mean, you name them, I'm taking Lindor.
Really?
He's the complete package. 4-plus tool player. He's not going to hit you 40 home runs, but he'll hit you 20. He'll steal you 30. He'll hit 300. He'll play. He has better defense than any of those guys. His defense. He's a phenomenal defensive shortstop. I just love Cleveland and their batting order. This is what I love about the order. It's like left, switch, right, switch, left, switch, right, switch. You can't go lefty on lefty. You can't go righty on righty anywhere in that lineup. And that's going to be hell for Joe Maddon and the Cubs to deal with. And I think the Cubs are feeling themselves too much. And last thing about it. The Cubs fans are on my damn nerves.
Oh,
and that's
really?
The other reason. They're as bad as 49er, Red Sox, those fans that they're crawling a hole. And then now that they're good, no, shut up. Where were you? Like the whole you were wearing a Dodger hat last week.
I don't have any Dodger hat.
Not you.
Oh, okay, I was going to say.
So our Giants fans are the same way. Believe in year. No, sorry. The believe in year, I'd stop believing. Hmm. So, you know, that whole thing, plus it'd be a better storyline if the Cubs lost.
Oh, I'd love it.
Dude, it's like in sports talk, like I root for stories more than teams now.
I know. I'm going to sound like a terrible person. I get so much joy. We have these sound clips that we have that we play every once in a while when we talk about the Cubs. I get so much joy of listening to these old people, like, I hope they win before I die.
I heard you guys at that. Before I die. Just you laughed at it. You caught hell for that last year, right?
Yes. Well, because this is the best part about Twitter sometimes. Some guy starts tweeting at us last year because we play those clips, and me and Taylor are just laughing at him. Like, oh, God, you know, I've been waiting so long. I'm 85. Hope they do it before I die. And like, I laugh because it's sports. Like, relax. Like, I understand you like your team, but who cares?
Right.
And they start crying and everything. But last year, some guy's like, who are these jokers making fun of Cubs fans? I'm going to go fight them. And I was just like, okay. Like, you're holding an infant child in your Twitter avatar picture, and your thing says, you know, it's got gospel quote and family first. But
holy cow!
Yeah, but you're going to come and fight some radio guys because they were making fun of old Cubs fans. Okay. And I'm still making fun of them.
Go have a Budweiser and chill out. Harry Carey will love you for it.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's the show for the week. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully you can, you know, hang out with us next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. I'm Joe Arrigo. That's JVT. Check them out on ESPN's Cofield and Company. 3-5, Monday through Friday, and 100.9.
3-6.
3-6.
I got 3 hours, bro.
Well, no, but the World Series is going to cut you guys short.
Today we're off early. As all the World Series games, we'll be off at about 4 this week.
Okay, so.
Except for Wednesdays. Tony Sanchez Show, ESPN 1100, every Wednesday at 6.
100.9 FM. I want to thank Mark Seidel and the whole ESPN staff for opening the studios to us and letting this go down. Guys, have a great rest of your week. I can't say rest of your week ever.
Second
time in a row. It's like I got a speech impediment.
Then stop wishing them happiness.
Wishing you happiness and joy. Anyway, have a great rest of your week. Enjoy yourselves and go Rebs.